This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann at Sawyers Bay in Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
Well, we're back on air, so that's a good thing.
It is so good. And man, have we got a marathon of recording to do as we now start recording all of the coming up for air students from cohort 3.
Indeed. Do you want to know that this is day 47 since I got the flu?
Oh, that is so bad.
And when I did like the first coughs on that very first day before it was like properly the flu, the nurses at work said, oh, don't let that turn into the 100-day cough.
And is so, it truly, did you get, is it whooping, is it like whooping cough?
No, it's more like a top of the chest cough that just will not go away. So since I got that flu, then I got the other flu. I got two flus and then a cough that won't go away. But I'm getting better. I'm getting better. I have been for a swim. So that's a good sign.
Well, how long did you swim?
Not very long.
No.
So who are we talking with today?
It is my great pleasure to reintroduce the very wonderful Lucky Hawkins. Lucky, it is a joy for us to have you back on the show. Welcome and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much, Mawira and Sam. It's great to be back on the podcast. It has been some time, I will say.
It's good to be back. It has been some time. So what's the news in Lucky Land?
I can't quite remember the last time we spoke, but in short, I was displaced, living in a house bus here, there and everywhere, which we renamed Holy Harriet because not only did the roof come off, the sunroof, but we sprung quite a significant leak. Since then, everything has gone amazingly, and we're in a brand new house in Waidor, so we are very, very, very happy.
Let's take a few steps back. You were living in Wairoa, doing your doctorate, and then it started to rain, and then it rained some more, and then it rained some more.
Yes, it did. We actually had a cyclone warning. And it passed, funny enough, well, not funny, as I'll get into, at 8:30 in the morning, we thought, oh, well, it's passed. Nothing happened. It was just a big humbug. Lo and behold, the rain had stopped, but the buildup of the rain in the waterfalls hadn't stopped. That came through the house where I lived very, very slowly, but within half an hour, it had, well, it was probably about waist high. We were, it wasn't good.
And over the next two years, is it 2.5 years or is it 1.5 years? It must be 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
How many different places did you live?
Last count, it was about 14, but I think it was close to 17. We were lucky enough to stay in for 2 to 3 months. Others were a week, some were one day. We were Airbnb-ing, short temporary accommodation. It's been rough. So hence why we brought the bus. We thought the bus was going to be our saviour. It wasn't. We thought, well, it's only a minor thing. What we didn't realise was that there was no one to do the minor job in Wairau because everywhere was flooded. So we had to get the bus to Gisborne, and unfortunately, that minor job, being Christmas time, it took just almost 4 months to fix. When we got it back, it wasn't fixed. So yeah, it's been rough.
And you spent a big chunk of the summer
A lot of
and
money.
autumn, but you spent you, moving. You're allowed to spend each, what is it, 3 days in each place?
We were very, very lucky in Gisborne. They had freedom camping from October to January. Oh, actually, it's until April. So we were very lucky to be able to park for 4 weeks at a time, and then you have to move on. So that wasn't too bad. By the time we went out there in February, we were able to stay for at least a month at a time. However, when that ended, we moved into town, and that wasn't pleasant at all because you more or less had to move every day or every other day. And unfortunately, the bus, not being as mobile as we had hoped, it was very hard to drive. Plus, it was full. So every time we moved, we had to unpack everything, pack it, while trying to navigate a full-time job as well as my study. So, it was a lot.
But you've got a house now. How did that come about?
We have a house. Persistence. When the flooding first happened, unfortunately, I got declined for assistance because I didn't own the place that I was in. I was the caretaker, and we were renovating it through a local education provider, getting students to do X job and X job. But the understanding was that I would stay in there long term, and because I didn't own it, I didn't get any help. I'm persistent. I did have to move away because there was just nowhere else to stay here. No patches of land. I exhausted all of those options, went through whānau. There was just nothing. And not only that, Wairau also experienced another quite significant flood on the other side of town. So we moved to Gisborne. Sorry, I lost the question there.
Well, how did you get to your house?
Oh yes. Then I heard through a friend of a friend of a friend that the houses that were being built at the moment, oh, sorry, that we're in, were available. So I applied, and I'll be honest, I emailed and rang them every day for about 3 months. Every day. I thought, well, I've got nothing to lose. And I'm very honest, I told them our situation. Why we were a little bit worried was because the warrant was coming up for the bus, and I knew that we wouldn't get it. And I thought, I didn't know what we were going to do. So I just rang and rang and rang and rang and emailed and just let them know, look, this is the situation. We're pretty stuffed as it is, but we're going to be even more stuffed when the warrant runs out. So very lucky. We're very lucky.
Indeed. Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's have Sia, Unstoppable.
I'll smile, I know what it takes to fool this town. I'll do it till the sun goes down and all through the night time. Oh yeah, oh yeah. I'll tell you what you wanna hear. Keep my sunglasses on while I shed a tear. It's never the right time. Yeah. I put my arm around so you are strong, my yeah. feeling sure is the only way to make friendships grow. But I'm too afraid now.
You are in a, what I, you know, like there are people in each community who are the activators and the doers and the makers of magic, and you're one of those people. Tell us about what you do in your community.
A previous role that I had, I was able to start programs within the Wairau and Gisborne regions, which I did with a local man. We put together a program that helped to feed the community. We based it on kaitiakitanga and feeding our community, or kai sovereignty. It worked amazingly. People were getting fed. Not only that, we weren't only, for lack of better words, teaching them, giving them a fish, we were teaching them to fish so that they could do it for themselves, teaching them skills where they could source the food locally, which was a big issue. Not only were roads closed, the shortages that we had, resource shortages, were just unbelievable. So we came up with the idea of, well, what can we do with what we have? Which is exactly what we did. We started this program and it was absolutely great. It became more than just the program of feeding people. It became sharing knowledge, sharing skills that they had learnt from their parents, their grandparents, that were passed on. So in effect, it wasn't just feeding their mouths, it was feeding their hearts, feeding their minds and feeding their souls, and sharing stories of the ways that they were taught and the forums that they were taught in. It was a way of healing. It had purpose.
So when you moved back to Gisborne, when circumstances forced you to leave Wairoa, did that continue, that mahi?
Absolutely. I made sure it did, even if it meant that I had to drive down in the weekends to make sure that it continued. One thing I knew when I moved to Gisborne was that I was coming back. And one thing that I am, I finish what I start. So absolutely, it did continue, and it is still continuing today.
That's so cool. And so your community must be breathing a great sigh of relief to have you back in town.
Yeah, it's been a little bit different. I felt like a goldfish in a bowl when I first came back, because I've done so many interviews as part of the housing, because what I understand is that we were one of the first. They did house some of the kaumātua, of course, I believe three or four, but we We were the first in one of the homes. So being the first, we did a lot of interviews, which is fine. But I've really just tried to take a step back, if that makes sense, look after our well-being, because moving around for 2 years, it takes its toll on you physically, not only emotionally and mentally. It takes a toll on you physically, not being able to cook regularly. We had so many problems with the bus. We actually lost power multiple times. It blew, and we just had no way to get it fixed. We also lost hope and trust in people fixing it. We didn't want to take it anywhere because we thought, well, what if it gets worse? So we were out without power. So we were essentially camping, which, of course, eating food that you can't refrigerate or buying it on a almost daily basis, it's not fresh. So things take its toll. Things take their toll.
Has it changed your, because you lost so much stuff in the flood, so many taonga, intergenerational things that have been handed down through your whānau photos. We've heard from you before the loss of those really precious things, and then the moving around and living in a bus. How does it feel like having a home and being able to have those things around you? Like, is it weird?
I love it. I'll tell you one thing that I can do that I hadn't done in a long, long time is sleep.
Yeah.
So probably in 2.5 years, I hadn't slept for any more than 4 hours, if you're lucky. And some of those sleeps weren't full sleeps. I'm talking cold, you know, we had no heating. We've got buckets, had buckets everywhere, so the 4 hours of sleep were broken sleeps, and you're just continuously thinking, oh, what do I have to do tomorrow? Because we had no water either. Yeah. So not only did I have to go from the beach into town, I also had to take water bottles, get food. So it was never shower. Had to do all of the basics before I started work, then work, and then take all of that stuff home before it was dark because we had no power. So it was rough. What is it like now? Sleep. Sleep has probably been the biggest thing for me, and being able to eat and prepare fresh food and get regular exercise.
So this is transformational in your life in so many ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I have noticed as well is because we're so comfortable in the house, we actually don't want to leave. We've become a little bit antisocial, but in a giggly way. We just want to stay home. We're so comfortable here.
What did you, with all of your, let's call them adventures, what did you learn about place? Because you're in lots of different places. Did the different places have different senses of where you were and the heritage or well-being or something?
The funny thing about all of the places that we went to, the element that supposedly took everything away, which was the flood, the water, was the exact place that I went back to live and to heal, the beach. I did all of this study, I looked at this and looked at that and researched this and researched that, but what I really found, the most overwhelming feelings of, I don't know what you can call it, fulfillment, happiness, was when I was sitting at the beach, just looking out at the beach, looking out at the water, feeling the waves come in, seeing them go out. It felt like breathing. It felt like I was breathing. That's what the water felt like. And I felt like, oh. That's what it felt like. I thought, okay, just breathe. Just slow down, calm down. Everything's going to be okay. So, you know, we went through the flood, and I will say for a year afterwards, it was pretty rough. I was waking up almost every night thinking, oh, we lost that. You never remember everything at once, what you lose, but I'd wake up in the middle of the night and think, oh, my father's this and my father's tools. And, you know, it was like nightmares for about a year. But being at the beach, that's what I felt, the waves coming in and the waves going out. It was like the tidal flows. It was like the ocean was breathing for me. That's what it felt like. I felt, I can't even explain it. I don't know if there's words. Yeah. It was like it was talking to me.
When the cyclone first happened, you talked about how you and your mum would talk and talk and talk, and then you'd just go and sit at the beach and we would just sit for a very long time. Is that the same feeling, or was it a different, did that sort of feeling change over time?
Oh, it did. When we sat at the beach, my mum and I think we were still in shock. It was like we weren't talking because we couldn't find the words. We were just silent. We were just trying to not so much think of the bad. We were just trying not to think, just trying to keep it together. Whereas when we were at the beach, even though we were parked up, things were just slowly starting to subside. Yeah.
One of the things that I know that you've been doing is collecting stones and sticks mementos from each of the places you've been.
Every place that we went to, I collected something, whether it was a funny shaped pine cone, a different type of driftwood, a burnt piece of driftwood. And I thought, not so little, well, they aren't so little, but mementos. I did take photos and I thought, no, I don't want to take photos. So I started to collect things. A few shells here, a few pine cones, a few funny different looking pieces of driftwood. But we've brought those with us to the house. And every now and then I go out and I look at them and I think, man, how far we've come. We've kept them. We've put them in the garden. And I think they look pretty amazing, to be honest. And they're just reminders. Be grateful from where we've come from. All of those mementos that we have are reminders of the places that we were at. Because I will say it wasn't all bad. It really wasn't. It was wonderful when the weather was wonderful. It was unbelievable, even though we were in the situation we were in.
Let's take the second of your music choices. It's Sia again with The Greatest.
Don't give up, I won't give up, don't. bubble sprite of the wild coasts, secluded inlets, and forest and beaches of Otago Peninsula, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi aroha nui ki koutou, ko tāua hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, and it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the care, the compassion, the empathy, the understanding that we all require to fully renew and recharge, reform, recalibrate, find ourselves again in this new world. And of course, within this process, there's always room for adventure and excitement and hope. And I know that for myself, I've been having a wonderful time discovering new ways of doing, being, seeing, feeling. In the creative realm, I've begun some art classes, learning to draw plants, which of course I adore, and learning to draw human bodies, which of course I also adore. And this whole process that we are evolved to take part in as a species, this fascinating capacity that we have to observe the living world around us, take that internally, draw inspiration from it, and then manifest and will manifest it externally, of course, is one of the beautiful, beautiful skills that we possess as a species. And it is one of the skills that goes beyond language, that we can, of course, harvest and enjoy as a legacy, as many of our fellow human beings have. And for myself, this is something that I have not yet experienced to a large degree. I've really enjoyed painting people's bodies, painting people's faces over the years, and particularly transforming them into our Tongan species, our native animals, our plants, and speaking with the people that I'm painting about the Tonga that they're becoming. And of course, this process of embodiment is very helpful as we strive to understand and protect these fellow life forms in the best ways. But the part that I'm at now is conceiving the world in terms of, you know, these foundational geometric shapes and how we understand them in terms of different forms of perspective and all sorts of things. And it's really, really fun. And one of the things that it has illuminated for me is, of course, our wonderful, wonderful possibilities of learning new things and how helpful this can be for our own rejuvenation and connection with the inner child. So I really hope for you that you're having opportunities at the moment to reconnect with things that you love to do as a younger version of yourself, and learning new ways of doing, being, seeing, feeling that really reignites all of those beautiful creative aspects of yourself that we all carry with us in different ways. I know for myself, the thought of venturing into this foundational artistic realm, observing objects and drawing them, didn't initially fill me with great excitement. The thought of smearing paint all over something in an excited frenzy, that definitely appeals to me. But I actually found in trying this observational drawing that it was a meditative and blissful and captivating experience, and the form of this plastic jar that I was drawing just absolutely captivated me. So of course I'm so grateful, I'm so honoured, it's a great privilege to share these experiences with you. I hope that you're having similar stimulating experiences for your consciousness, and a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles, we're talking again with Lucky Hawkins. Lucky, there's the river that went through your house, but it's still a pretty fundamental part of your relationship with your place. What's your relationship with the river now?
I actually still go down to the beach every day and into the river because they meet at what we call the bar. So when I first moved into the new house, I thought, wouldn't it be not ironic, but it would be good for me to slowly start walking towards the bar. And it's taken a while. It took seven weeks. I just did a little bit by a little bit, but I slowly wanted to not only improve my physical well-being, but I thought, well, if I mentally and emotionally continue to walk towards the river, for me it's going to be symbolic because I'm getting closer and closer to it, and in a way having a conversation with it and saying, it's all right, you know, I've let all of that go. We're here now and we're in a much more positive space, and to rebuild my relationship with our river and our awa, because it's so important to our people in Wairoa, even though we've had Cyclone Gabriel, but we've had a lot. The flooding on the other side of the river, it's been a lot. But I'm really just trying to focus on my well-being with the river at the moment, and walking closer and closer to it every day has been a way of improving my relationship with our awa.
Mawera introduced me to the millennial tree in a place whose name escapes me, but Mawera is about to remind me.
Hikataya Domain near Opotiki, and its other name, it's commonly called the Millennium Tree, but its proper name is Taki Takiro. 2,500-year-old Purdere tree.
I actually downloaded these snippets online, and I've been listening to it while I've been walking towards the river on my walks. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's so beautiful.
So there's a great book which I had to buy after I visited the tree, that area. And it's got the tree on one side of the page and the history and, you know, essentially what the tree is seeing and the story on the other side. It's the similar, and I'm thinking about the river because that river's been there similarly a really, really long time. And so the river... Is there a similar story to be told about the river? Or the story of the river, perhaps?
Absolutely. So it's escaping me at the moment, but the river actually comes from different tributaries, and it actually meets at Tauranga Falls. It drops 35 metres into a pool, and that's where the Wairoa River, or what we call the Wairoa River now, that's where it's formed, at Tauranga Falls. And all of the kahui that are in Wairoa, which are the smaller hapu, they all come off somewhere along the river. That's what I found, is that the awa is most definitely not only in our whakapapa, but it goes back much further before our time, and it's going to be there after our time. It has become a part of our lives. It's in us and it's within us. And like I was saying before, my relationship with water in general wasn't flash. You know, I had nightmares for over a year, but it wasn't actually the water that was the problem. It was what had happened. It was the incident. Looking at the root cause, it definitely wasn't the water. It was the flooding. It was what it had done. But my relationship with water was depleted, to say the least. So what I have found is my study has made me focus on that, about my, well, especially when it comes to my well-being, and I've found that water has actually been my saviour. My relationship with water has been part of my well-being. and slowly but surely making my way and walking towards back to the beach and back to the water has been part of my healing and part of why I love living in this house, because I've had the opportunity to do that.
Part of your research is looking at the, not just the long history of the colonization of Wairoa and the relationship of that with education, but more focused on looking how do we make that better. Do you see that making it better intertwined somehow with that story of the Awa?
Like I was saying before, the river is definitely a part of us, and I think I know that because we're all interconnected, we have to look at every part of our community, which is not only our river, it's our people. How are we going to do that? What are we going to use, or what tools are we going to use to not only better our awa, better our community, better our people, better our tamariki, better ourselves, collectively, of course, as a community, of course, but I definitely do know, well, within my scope anyway, that education has been a way that we can help to rehabilitate, passing that on to generations and generations through wānanga, through hui, but the regeneration of our river will be our regeneration. It's all interlinked, it's all interconnected.
How do you, I'm not sure if the right words are, how do you make that happen? But how do you make that happen?
How do I, or how do we as people?
Yeah, that's a good point. How do we as people, and you as the person I'm talking to and on the ground?
I'm going to go off track a little bit, but one thing that I have struggled with within my studies is to find my place in where I fit in the bigger scheme of things. And one thing that I have taken quite a few years to figure out is that everybody contributes in some way. And for the last few years, I've been trying to do such huge, huge things, and I haven't really seen that it's the little things that matter. And I've never seen the value in the little things. I'm always trying to do big, great things. And what I've realised is it's enough for everybody just to do a little bit. And it's enough for me just to be doing what I'm doing. How are we going to do it? Everybody just does their little bit. And it compounds, and it becomes something much larger.
A team.
Yeah. Yes. Everybody has some contribution. As small as it may seem, all of those smaller efforts all accumulate into something much bigger.
Has anyone come to your community and mapped that system? Mapped the connection between all of you so that you can all see how the team actually works?
That's a really good question. I'm on so many groups. I do a lot of things on Facebook because we like to stay home a lot now. Everybody is doing quite a lot. Is it connected? I think it's as connected as much as that it could be. Could it be better? I think a lot of things could be better. How? I actually don't know. So the answer to your question is, I don't think so.
It would be a cool thing to do, to actually sit down. So for you to sit down and think about you at the centre of the system, and then you start building your connections, and your mum is a connection, and the people who provided the housing are a connection, and wherever the bus has gone, all those places that have fixed that, the council, the government, the power provider, the school that's nearby, the roading network, all of that is all part of the system. And how does the system connect, and who are all the parts within it? It would be really interesting to map the Wairoa system.
It would. I'd have to say a big player there would be the council.
Yep.
Not so much because they hold the purse strings, but they do make a lot of the decisions for Wairau, the Wairau District Council.
And then everyone who works in that council is a system in itself that connects to you on a personal level. So there's the council, the organisation, but then there's the council that's full of your whanaunga and all of how that works. So much complexity there.
It has its own whakawhawha, doesn't it?
It really does.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's not only an entity, it's a being.
It is. It's an enabler in the community, not just for or because it governs how the system works, but it's also an enabler because all of those people who take a wage to work in that then feed that back into the community and enable the community to keep living.
Mm.
So it's more than, it's so complex.
It really is. And funny enough, we're actually voting at the moment, so we can make a change. Totally if it's needed, of course. Yeah, we can be part of change.
Are you guys voting for Māori wards in this election?
We are.
Oh, good. Yeah.
We are.
That is so good. I'm really glad about that. Not all councils are. Lucky, you have had so much upheaval in your life, and I remember the last year of my DPP having a lot of upheaval, and it was the thing that actually kept me focused and kept me moving forward. How's it going with you?
Exactly what you just said is exactly what's happening with me. So I have had, it has been a lot to say the least. I actually mentally mapped, and I know I do need to get this down on in writing or some way, I mentally mapped the career changes I've been through, the different homes that I've lived in, the situations that have changed in my life, and the one constant that I've had in the last 4 years is the DPP.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, at times it got put to the back burner. It didn't get its day in court. And I sat back and I thought, what has been there all along? What has brought me back on the straight and narrow? What has made me think again? What has made me reflect again? And it was the DPP. For me, it has really made me be more conscious about reflection, about being honest with myself. It has been a struggle emotionally and mentally because I'm always wanting to do more. We spoke today in our DPP meeting, myself, Sam and Ruth, and we talked about a plate. Now, if a plate smashed onto the ground and into a million pieces, what I would do is I would hurry to glue that plate back together because I'd want it to be a plate and I'd want it to be perfect. I couldn't accept that maybe it's meant to be in a million pieces and every piece should be celebrated. That's what I see the DPP as.
Yeah.
It's fractured pieces, but it is still a plate.
Yes, it
and
is.
Me trying to glue this plate furiously together throughout my journey, it has been such an emotional struggle because I just could not let it go that those pieces didn't fit together anymore. I deliberately made them fit and they didn't. They were no longer the plate. They were fractured pieces of the plate, which made them something else. But they still added up to the plate.
Yeah.
So the DPP for me has been life-changing in the process of writing it up, but even that's a struggle because I want to do it my way, but I know I need to do it this way and that way, and it's just an internal turmoil that I'm still struggling with and I probably will for some time.
But you can do it both ways. You can do it your way and you can do it the way that needs to be to comply with the academic rigor that is needed for you to be able to pass. You can do it both ways. One of the greatest moments in my journey with my DPP came when Martin Andrew, who was my supervisor at the time, because I worked with Martin and Sam. Oh, there were so many amazing moments, actually. This was one of the first ones, actually. And it was when
Martin asked me what the golden thread was that wove through all of my practice spaces, this rope that connected everything, this thread, this something, this line. And I realised it wasn't a golden thread, it was a red thread for blood. It was the blood of my whakapapa. It was the whakapapa of everything that had happened in my life, whether it was through my practice space, whether it was through the journeys, the good things, the bad things. There was this one thread of whakapapa that wove through everything. And so once we find what that thread is, whether it's the pieces of the plate, whether it's this line of this red line of whakapapa, no matter what it is, once we've got that, then we've got the doctorateness. That's the one thing of being able to find our, it's almost like a game of snakes and ladders. And mapping that, the things that make you go up and the things that make you to go down. And you've got that already. You've got all those stories. You've got that connection of everything. And now it's just about putting in a way that some people can sit and read and go, oh, I see her doctorateness there. That's all. You've just got to give it to the form that they can understand it and see your doctorateness. Yeah, because you have it all there, Lucky. You've got it all there, and some.
And trusting your own voice.
Yes, because your voice matters. It's been your experience. And I'm so glad that you chose the Doctor of Professional Practice over a conventional PhD, because these things wouldn't have had the same weight and the same magic and the same power. Those stories of everything that you've been through to get to this day.
You're right, because if I had chosen a PhD with someone else, I would have done what I always do, which is conform.
Yeah.
I would have conformed, I would have stayed inside the box, and I would have done what I was told.
Yeah, and this magic of your DPP is going to transform other people's lives, because they're going to see the journey, the way that Lucky lived the journey, and the power of that to affect positive change in the lives of others. But that's been the whole way you've lived your life forever, isn't it? Your whole life has been about affecting positive change in the lives of others, of helping people to see their way forward, of helping people to see through their hardships and their struggle. And that's the Lucky way. Yeah. And so here you are with this beautiful work called this DPP, Doctor of Professional Practice, where you're going to be able to share the Lucky way on such a more grand scale. It's so exciting. I think it's just so exciting. I can't wait till it's finished, and I cannot wait to read it.
You're right. I really didn't give the DPP enough credit, to be honest.
All the credit remains with you. The DPP is just the thing that gets you, it just is the focus that keeps you moving forward. But all the credit is with you, my friend. Don't give away the credit. It's all you. And okay. Actually, and the DPP exists because of you anyway.
I'm going to sneak in one question to end the show. Which one should we pick? Let's go for superpower. What's your superpower, Lucky?
One word?
It can be as many words as you like, but one word will do. As long as it's not flying.
If I'm completely honest with myself, drive. Yeah. It would have to be drive. I'm pretty driven to achieve what I put my mind to.
That sounds good to me.
And me.
Moira.
Lucky, it is. There's never a bad day to talk to Lucky. Every time I talk to you, it's always a great day. That gives me things to talk about to think about. You inspire me. Through your hardships, here you are still smiling. And I think that we're very lucky to have you in this world. And I can't wait to hear your DPP is finished, and I can't wait to read it. And I just want to say that everybody who will be listening will be really proud of you for what you've done and where you've got to. Thanks for joining us today. Kia ora.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going out to Caravan Palace, Portobello. With people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic and the University of Otago. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. With Mawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mā te wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.